So today is November 9th. I'm saying that for the delight of this little chip here so that it knows where we are when it gets downloaded onto a CD and onto the computer. Right before that I came over, I saw this really cool quote I had written down in my book. And I don't know where it's from, but maybe it fits with this talk. It says, "The disciple's search and endeavor seems to resemble a quest, but is in actuality the way." So the disciple's search and endeavor seems to resemble a quest, but is in actuality the way. So I have a question for all of you on this second day. Many of you are tired and your minds are raging and roiling. There isn't much relief in your bodies, especially your knees and backs are beginning to ache. Yet you persist. You endure, coming back again and again to mu, to breath, to sounds. My question for you is a simple one. Why? Why do you practice Zen, this very steep and arduous path? There are easier ways. There are less demanding ways, and certainly less painful. Yet here you are again. No one here is doing this for a first time, so you cannot plead ignorance for what you've put yourself into. And some are here for the fifth, or the 15th, or the 25th year. Why? When commenting on this simple word, why, Yamada Roshi, Aiken Roshi's teacher, said, "But why? Ah, this why. It is the wonderful charm, the magic talisman that brings the Zen student to enlightenment." But that is my question for you. Why? What is your question that brought you to this point? I think that is an important thing to know. What is your question that pointed you down a wisdom path, this path? The Buddha Shakyamuni had a question which led him away from his wife and son, away from his parents and friends, from his life of physical comfort, pleasure, and riches. He wanted to know about suffering and its origins. He wanted to know if there was a path that would stop the cycle of countless births and deaths. There are countless personal questions that come down through our lineage from the Buddha onward that spurred someone to leave home and practice. We take up many such questions in our koan study. After Dogen's mother died, he saw the incense rising to the ceiling and wondered and questioned life's ephemerality. Hakuin questioned Ganto's scream as Ganto was run through by a bandit's sword. Others have wondered about war and famine and natural calamity and its purpose. Others about abuse, torment, and death. And others yet about beauty, celebration, and the wonders of nature. So what questioned opened this path to you? And please don't say, "Oh, I was just following my toes or my nose," because I won't believe it. I know my unformed question came from two events in a young boy's life. One event happened in 1960. I lived in an extended family dwelling in New York City, and the Cuban Missile Crisis was paramount in people's minds. It was on the news. It surrounded activities at school. And it was the topic of many heated conversations around the dinner table. I remember when the crisis was at its heightened crux and imminent death seemed threaded throughout the day and night. I remember being filled with fear and terror. Fear and terror of the impending death of my neighbors and friends. And then closer yet, the death of my grandparents, uncles and aunties and cousins. And then closer yet, my brothers and sisters and parents. And then closest, my own death. I remember rising from a family gathering and walking into the bathroom. And filled with fear and death, looking into the mirror and seeing the eyes, my eyes filled with those very things. I can still see those young boys' eyes any time I look into a mirror, if I look long enough and deeply enough. Those eyes, my eyes, still spur my practice. The other event, which was the response or answer to my question about death, which was first birth when I looked into my own floating eyes, happened before the question. It happened before 1960. I was looking out of one of the three windows in our apartment that actually could see the night sky. All the other windows looked across an 8-foot gap at the blank brick wall of the next two-story flat across the way. I was looking at the clear night sky. Our apartment was darkened, as were the surrounding apartments, so maybe it was late at night. It was quiet. And I was drawn outward into the stars, the fluid rippling and ever-twirling night sky. And without having noticed a shift, I found that the night sky was located in my bottomless belly. And I sensed without sensing, and thought without thinking, that out there, and in here were artificial descriptions, and the experience itself was fundamentally different and quite wonderful and quite grand. However, I never thought of this event until the Cuban Missile Crisis. So a response was formed before my question, but both have led me ever since. So what leads you? What is your question? Of course, you do not need to map your question's birthplace during this session. That would just create an unnecessary distraction. However, when session is completed, wonder about your question's conception. This will add body. This will add bone and sinew to your question. My sense of each of you sitting here. Each of you was led by an event and a question to this practice, to this session. But if not, that is okay. Here is a story for you. Incidentally, the middle part of this story shows up as a koan, number 86 in the Book of Equanimity, which I'll take up tomorrow. This story comes from the transmission of the lamp and is also the first story in part 4 of Burton Watson's The Zen Teaching of Master Lin Chi. It's quite a long story, so feel free to shift your posture a little bit and relax. So when Lin Chi was first in Wang Po's group, he went about his activities in an earnest and straightforward manner. The head monk expressed admiration, saying, "Though he's still young, he's different from the others." Then he asked, "How long have you been here?"
3 years, said Lin Chi. The head monk said, "Have you been in to question the teacher yet?"
Lin Chi said, "No, I haven't been in to ask questions. I don't know what to ask." The head monk said, "Why don't you go ask the reverend who heads this temple, what is the real basic meaning of the Buddha Dharma?" The master went, or Lin Chi went and asked. But before he had finished speaking, Wang Po struck him a blow. When Lin Chi returned from the interview, the head monk said, "How did the question go?" Lin Chi said, "Before I had even finished asking the question, the reverend struck me. I don't understand." The head monk said, "Just go ask him again." Only certain types of people can be the head monk. You have to have a particular streak in you. So Lin Chi went and asked again, and Wang Po again hit him. In this way, he went 3 times to ask his question, and 3 times was struck. Lin Chi came to report to the head monk, Thanks to your kind instruction, you beat the shit out of me. Actually, it doesn't say that. It says, "Thanks to your kind instruction, I've been able to question the reverend. 3 times I questioned him, and 3 times he struck me. To my regret, I'm impeded by bad karma and can't grasp the profound meaning in all this. Now I'll be going on my way." The head monk said, "If you're going, be sure to take leave of the reverend." Lin Chi bowed low and withdrew. The head monk went to see Wang Po before Lin Chi could do so and said, "That young monk who came to question you has a lot of good sense. I hope you'll help him along. Later, I'm sure he'll shape up into a fine big tree that will make cool shade for the people of the world." When Lin Chi came to take his leave, Wang Po said, "You mustn't think of going anywhere else. Just go to Ta Yu's place by the river rapids in Kaoan. He will surely explain things for you." When Lin Chi arrived at Ta Yu's place, Ta Yu asked, "Where have you come from?" Lin Chi said, "I've come from Wang Po's place." Ta Yu said, "Did Wang Po have any words or phrases to teach you?" Lin Chi said, "I asked him 3 times, what is the real basic meaning of the Buddha Dharma? And 3 times I was struck. I don't know whether I did something wrong or not." Ta Yu said, "Wang Po is such a kind old grandmother, wearing himself out on your account. And then you come here and ask whether you did something wrong or not." At these words, Lin Chi experienced a great enlightenment. He said there really wasn't anything so hard about Huang Po's Buddha Dharma after all. Ta Hu seized hold of him and said, "This little bedwetting devil, a minute ago asking if you did something wrong, and now you say there's nothing so hard about Huang Po's Buddha Dharma. What kind of truth do you think you spied? Out with it! Out with it!" Lin Chi punched Ta Yu 3 times in the ribs with his fist.
Taiyu let go of him and said, "Your teacher is Wang Po. You're no business of mine." Lin Qi took leave of Taiyu and returned to Wang Po. When Wang Po saw him coming, he said, "This fellow coming and going, when will he ever have done with it?" Lin Qi said, "And it's all because of your grandmotherly kindness." Then, when he had finished the customary greetings, he went and stood in attendance by Huang Po. Huang Po said, "Where have you been?" Lin Qi said, "Following your kind instructions the other day, I went to visit Ta Hu." Huang Po said, "Did Ta Hu have any words or phrases for you?" Lin Qi then related the conversation that had taken place between Ta Hu and himself. Huang Po said, "If only I could get my hands on that fellow right now, I'd give him a real wallop." Lin Qi said, "What's that you say you'll do? You can taste this right now." With that, he gave Huang Po a slap. Huang Po said, "This raving idiot coming back here and pulling the tiger's whiskers." Lin Qi gave a shout. Huang Po said, "Attendant, drag this raving idiot out of here and take him to the monk's hall." And then if you could imagine, it goes on and on and on from there. So this is one of the more famous stories in our Zen annals. It's quite a story, isn't it? And it has many parts. But today I'd like to emphasize only the first part of the story. Lin Qi had been a diligent and active member of the Sangha. He practiced assiduously. We don't know what brought him to a spiritual life, but Chan was not his first place of practice. He initially, as he tells us in section number 19, he initially studied the Vinaya, the study of precepts and monastic discipline, and then he studied the sutras and commentaries. At some point, he felt these studies were not quenching his thirst, so he turned to the discipline called Chan. He sat with Huang Po and was diligent and steadfast in the day's activities. But he never approached the teacher. He never asked a question. So if you say you don't have a guiding question, you're in good company. Fortunately, one day the head monk took pity on Lin Qi and gave him a question, and said, "Go ask the teacher, what is the basic meaning of Zen?" So Lin Qi did that, and almost before he finished the question, he was given a blow. What would you have done in such a situation? Someone tells you what to ask, and you go to ask it, and the door is slammed in your face, or you are admonished or ignored. What would you do? Lin Qi did an interesting thing. He made the question his own, and he did the only thing possible. He let it guide him right back to the teacher's quarters, and he asked again. And then he asked again. This is an important point. Each of you sitting here have a question, either the one you came with, the one that directed you to this path, or the one I gave you. What is Mu? Who hears? Or does the sound of the bell come to you? Or do you go to it? Make these questions your own, even if initially they feel unnatural or foreign. How do you make them your own? Ask yourself the question as soon as you open your eyes after your nighttime sleep. Then before the beginning and at the end of each activity, tea, sutra recitation, eating, the long walk, and most importantly, at the beginning of each period. Ask the question, and then let it go. Let it sink into your body. Let it sink into your belly. There it will grow and become you. If you get angry or feel hopeless or sad or happy, that begins to give body to the question. And always, before you go to sleep, whether for a nap or at night, ask yourself, what is mu? Who hears? And then gently fall asleep. You do not have to work the question and solve it. This isn't school. This is your life. There isn't a multiple choice response. There is only your lived life as response. Dokusan 2 will help you make the question your own. I will ask you the question again and again, and you will have feelings and thoughts when I say, not intimate enough, or make it even more personal. After hearing that for the 10th, or 100th, or 1,000th time, you may begin to feel inadequate, or angry, or stupid, or hopeless. You may have thoughts, and all those things are good. Plow those feelings and thoughts back into the question, allowing it to become you. You can only be angry the way you do, or sad the way you do, or frustrated. And so the question grows and becomes yours, becoming more intimate, becoming more personal. Of course, the point of Dokusan is not to create those feelings, but in part, that is what happens. Now, if you already have a life-given question, that is good. But your work is to reframe it as mu, to reframe it as who hears. Eiken Roshi writes, for some, the personal question is, who am I really? And that question is resolved through mu. For others, it is, what is death? And that question, too, is resolved through mu. Eiken Roshi continues, saying, for me, it was, what am I doing here? For many students, it is Shakyamuni's question, why should there be suffering in the world? The discursive words in such questions just take the inquirer round and around in the brain. With mu, the single word of a single syllable, the agonizing interrogations, who, why, and what, are not answered in any literal sense, but they are certainly resolved. So if you have your own personal question, let it be transformed into mu. What is mu? Or into who hears? Who hears that sound of the jet going across the sky? Who hears the splashing on the beach outside the door? And for others, the same thing if I've given you a question. Just let Mu do Mu. Just let the splashing come onto the floor. Wet your zafu and zabutan. Wet your knees. Completely get you wet. Splash. Splash. And what if you are a mature student and have been practicing and sitting for 50 or 60 or 70 years? Then remember Yamada Roshi, who died at the age of 85. He sat, lived, and died with who hears those last 8 years of his life. He allowed it to continually recreate him. He allowed it to further clarify his ever-deepening waters. And thus it allowed him to stretch his branches, giving shade and respite to all living beings. Emulate Bodhidharma if you've been sitting for 50 or 60 years and can no longer remember your question. Remember Bodhidharma, who, when asked about himself, replied, "I don't know. I don't know where I came from. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know who I am." He continually presented the bottomless ocean of this very moment. Do you also do that in each instant of your life? Does your light shine as brilliantly as possible in every moment? If not, why? If not, how? Okay, thank you.